Just when you thought the Catholic Church sex abuse crisis could not get any more vile, we had the report by a grand jury in Pennsylvania detailed how hundreds of priests raped over 1,000 children over the years, yet it was the priests who received the protection of the church. This became known shortly before Pope Francis made a long overdue visit to Ireland, where the sexual abuse by priests had also been revealed and answers had been demanded, not just sought. Pope Francis expressed his sorrow over these acts and promised action. Is Pope Francis able to place people before the church? Are his words to be believed? Is this a true priority for him? Here with an analysis of this is a Vatican insider and author of the best-selling book, The Dictator Pope, Henry Steyer. Thank you for being here today, sir.
It's a pleasure.
And you can follow Henry on Twitter at Dictator Pope. That's his handle on Twitter. So we've heard the Pope's words in as a reaction, although I have to point out, when the Pennsylvania grand jury report came out, it took 3 days for the Vatican to release a paper statement. And then when the Pope Francis went to Ireland, he verbally expressed his quote-unquote concern over this issue. Is he to be believed based upon what you know and understand about how the church under Pope Francis is operating these days?
Well, no, he certainly isn't to be believed. It's Pope Francis's style to say one thing and act in a completely different one in all sorts of ways. He's declared that there's a zero tolerance policy about clerical abuse, sexual abuse, and in fact he's pardoned a number of people who'd previously been condemned. And then if you look at the prelates, the bishops whom he's been promoting and protecting, these are people, notably in America nowadays, the people who've been named as covering up sexual abuse. These are the people whom Pope Francis has been protecting and promoting.
And when you think of the scale, I mean, the Pennsylvania report is just one example. Of course, the Boston Globe reporters back in 2001, they had 80 instances that started this whole domino of revelations. How can the Vatican at any point say they weren't aware of this?
They say it, and it isn't true. We know that there's been a vast flood of sexual abuse among the clergy for years. And as the Philadelphia report made clear, and other reports have made clear, it's been a policy for a long time for bishops to simply cover up these acts, move priests from one parish to another or one diocese to another. And we're now seeing, as Archbishop Vigano made clear in his testimony a few days ago, we're now seeing that this goes right up to the top, to the Vatican.
And as reaction to that, I don't know if you saw this, Chicago NBC News had an interview with Chicago Cardinal Kubik, who said the following. When asked about the church scandal, he said, "The Pope has a bigger agenda. He's got to get on with things of talking about the environment and protecting migrants, carrying on the work of the church. We're not going to go down a rabbit hole on this." Is that symbolic to the cover?
Yes, this is the typical method of setting up a smoke screen. And in fact, this has been the policy of Pope Francis all throughout his pontificate. He's been talking about issues which the liberal media will praise him for, you know, immigration and so on. And this is a smokescreen for the complete lack of reform within the church itself.
Talking with Henry Steyer, his best-selling book, The Dictator Pope, The Inside Story of the Francis Papacy. You can follow Mr. Steyer on Twitter at Dictator Pope, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. The Pope has obviously shown himself to be supportive of the gay lifestyle, which obviously goes against the church writings and certainly biblical writings. But when you think that these are basically priests who are raping boys, which means that these priests are gay, how can the Pope promise to deal with someone who whose lifestyle he is supportive of.
Well, the Pope has a record throughout his lifetime, you know, when he was Archbishop of Buenos Aires, of simply ignoring cases of priests who've sexually abused boys when these cases were reported to him. Now, why has he followed this this policy? It's pretty difficult to say. It's just a policy of doing nothing. But I think there's a positive aspect to this, that he's been deliberately surrounding himself with morally weak people, because he knows that he can control them that way, and we see them. We see this very much in the Vatican today.
And certainly, as you write about in the Dictator Pope, you also write very detailed background of Pope Francis through his time before he became Pope. And if you want to grade someone's career as a religious person and working through the ranks of the Catholic Church, he was not the most successful individual. How could someone with, at best, a weak track record attain the position that he did?
Well, because as I explained in the Dictator Pope, he was pushed forward as a candidate by the St. Gallen group of cardinals, a group who actually described themselves as a mafia. These are the words of Cardinal Danneels himself, one of the members of the group. What they wanted was a liberal as Pope, and this was their motive for putting him forward. They didn't bother about whether he had a good record as Archbishop of Buenos Aires, and I'm afraid the rest of the cardinals didn't bother to find out. If they had done, they would never have voted for him.
So, in fact, the Pope didn't advance because of what he accomplished. It was because of what others wanted to have accomplished, and they needed him in that position.
Yes. Now, it's worth saying that what the cardinals wanted in 2013 was reform. Now, this meant reform of the finances of the Vatican, which were in an appalling state, reform of the Vatican bureaucracy, and especially the reform of the appalling situation of sexual abuse among the clergy. Now, these are precisely the things that Pope Francis has not delivered, and as far as the sexual aspect goes, he's made it worse, as we've recently seen.
We're seeing little by little, I guess, cracks in the armor. For example, here in New Jersey, and the Cardinal in Newark, Joseph Tobin, took part in a protest which was organized by the Cardinal from Albany, New York, who came down to hold his protest in Newark because of the history of Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, and that's where he perpetrated his evil. We're seeing one or two bishops and cardinals just flat out say that Pope Francis has to resign. What's the immediate future hold for the Catholic Church and for Pope Francis? Could Pope Francis become the first pope to resign?
Well, as you know, he's not the pope, first pope to resign. We've already got the previous pope who resigned, and he's still with us. Of course, Pope Benedict didn't resign in circumstances of complete scandal as Pope Francis would. I don't see Pope Francis resigning voluntarily, but I think that public opinion is going to force him to do so. And in that sense, he would be a first. He'd be the first pope who's forced to resign.
Or I guess you could say the first pope to be technically impeached.
Yes, well, I know one doesn't know whether that's going to be possible. You know, it's never been done in the Catholic Church. But we are in a very critical situation, and there must be literally thousands of bishops and many thousands of priests throughout the world thinking that this is an intolerable situation and that something has to be done about it. And, this surge of opinion is probably going to be effective.
And certainly what Henry writes in the Dictator Pope, the inside story of the Francis Papacy, will give you the added knowledge and the insight to help realize why things are headed through in the church, at least the way that they are headed, and why certain common sense ideas and actions are being delayed and even being denied. You can follow Henry on Twitter at Dictator Pope. Again, the book is The Dictator Pope, The Inside Story of the Francis Papacy. Henry Sari, thank you so much for being here today.
All right, thank you.